Once a year, we allow men onto Radio Gorgeous, and I'm pleased to say that Sean Smith, biographer of the stars, is now a regular. In the past, we've talked about Sean's books featuring the Spice Girls, George Michael and Ed Sheeran. Today, we're talking about the most controversial, now ex-royal, activist, actor, mother, and Prince Harry's partner, Meghan. Sean has written a wonderful, sympathetic book about a much maligned woman, Meghan Misunderstood, published by HarperCollins. Hi, warm welcome back to Radio Gorgeous, Sean.
Hello, good to be here.
So why Meghan?
Well, I didn't actually know much about Meghan when I started this book just over a year ago. I watched a programme about Meghan and Harry's trip to Africa. And in it, she's interviewed by the excellent Tom Bradby and was very close to tears. And I thought, hang on a minute, what's going on? Why is this royal woman so upset? So I decided to take a look, and quite honestly, I was rather shocked at the way she'd been treated, the negativity that has surrounded her in the media and elsewhere, especially online. And I thought, let's get something down that really shows that this is a woman of substance who we are treating unfairly.
Totally, totally. So you're brilliant at finding out about celebrities' pasts. Especially their time before they're famous. I think that's what your brilliance lies. What have you unearthed about Meghan, which we're going to be surprised about?
Well, Meghan was very much a thoughtful and articulate girl who became a thoughtful and articulate woman. She was always interested in the issues that matter. In LA, for instance, she was growing up when the infamous Rodney King riots happened, very locally to where she lived with her mum in South Central LA. And there's a lovely story that she couldn't understand why it was snowing. And of course, it wasn't snowing at all. It was debris from the rioting and what have you, and her mum told her to come inside very quickly. So she was very much aware of the important things in life. She famously wrote to Hillary Clinton when she was 11 or 12 about an advertisement for a washing up soap that said, that addressed women. You know, women do the dishes was the implication. And 11 or 12 year old Meghan Markle wasn't having it. And she, encouraged by her mum and dad, wrote a letter to Procter & Gamble, wrote to Hillary Clinton, also wrote to a TV station who had her on. And she was amazingly articulate. And she's only 12. You know, I was very, very impressed.
Fantastic. So tell us, what has made Meghan Markle? Tell us about her childhood and her quite complex background.
Meghan Markle is mixed race. In the US, they tend to refer to that as biracial in her case. Her mother is African-American and her father was very much from a white-only area out east, and he went to find his fortune in Los Angeles. She was very aware, Meghan was very aware from an early age about the complex question of racial identity, and hers in particular. There's a well-known story which she has referred to in some of her best speeches about how she was asked to tick a box at school. Just a simple box, what is your ethnicity? Is it white? Are you black? Are you Mexican? Whatever, Latin, sorry. And but there was nothing for being biracial, and she didn't know which box to tick. And she has said in some of her best speeches that she went home and her dad, who was rather grumpy about this, said, next time you draw your own box. Which is perfect, you know, it's perfect advice for, but all these little things mount up. And one of the interesting things about Meghan Markle was she had a real struggle to become a well-known and successful actor. Lots of really, you know, roles where she was encouraged to wear not very much and say hardly anything, you know, like high in a short dress type roles. But the moment she became better known and had more influence and had a voice, she used it to talk about the things that matter in the world. The things like female empowerment, gender equality, racial injustice. It's not rocket science to understand that these are important issues. You just need people with voices in the world to stand up for them and state that they exist.
Yeah, but
just
to think, there were loads of actors and actors out there who don't want to stand on a soapbox, that don't want to be, you know, that just want to get on with being actors. I mean, do you think that part of becoming an actor was a good chance for her to get her voice out there? Do you think that?
No, I don't necessarily think that that's the case. I mean, she left the prestigious Northwestern University, having been quite academic there. And she's a California girl, and her dad was a sound and lighting man. So she hung around sets. She knew about what it was like to be an actor. But she served a long apprenticeship through her 20s before she got her best known role in Suits. And the point I was making earlier about these childhood things that influenced her, they continued to influence her. And when she was able to talk more about the things that mattered to her, she wasted no time in doing so. I feel one of the things that we do tend to do as a society is think that celebrities should just shut up and, you know, they've got enough money, go back to your big house and drive your fast car. But actually, there are a lot of people in the world who really respond to celebrities. So I'm actually all in favor of them speaking out. Some people, you know, will just say, oh, you know, that damned actor or whatever, and why doesn't he just go away? You know, what does he know about?
Yeah, like, you know, people dedicating their Oscar to climate change or that sort of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think this is really important, and the rest of the world tends to catch up afterwards. One of the interesting things about Meghan and Harry now, in my opinion, is that they've become global since they left the UK. They are talking about things that really matter. I mean, just today, Harry was talking about HIV and the need for people who felt they wanted a test to get an easier test in the world.
That's fantastic. No, it's that will, you're going a bit fast today, Sean, for me.
Oh, sorry. I'm just enthusiastic. I'm sorry. I'm enthusiastic about Meghan Markle because I really feel that she should be taken seriously, and we take negativity far too seriously.
Yeah, I wonder if it's a British trait, but we'll get back to that later. What I want to ask is about her schooling, because I think her schooling had a massive influence on her. And I think her mother also gave her the big influence on mother being yoga and spiritual, gave her a big influence on caring about others.
Yes, her mum, Doria, certainly a big influence and still is. I mean, they are very close mum and daughter. I went to one of the church services that they used to go to, a place called the Agape Church. And it was really invigorating, and everybody was, I mean, obviously we live in difficult times now, but this was earlier in the year, and there was a great feeling of spirit and togetherness there. And I thought I could see how you would develop empathy in this environment. And I think that's one of the gifts that her mum has given Meghan is empathy and being able to have for want of a better word, the Meghan hug. And, you know, you, when you were able to hug people and she was over here, she was just so natural in doing that. And I think her mum had a lot to do with that. Her school, the Immaculate Heart in Los Angeles, wonderful school. They were very welcoming to me. And
all girls Catholic, isn't it? All girls Catholic, yeah.
Absolutely. And they used to start school with if it wasn't a Catholic school, I'd call it a call to arms, but it's sort of like, hello, everybody, with and it was, you know, a thought for the day and have a great day. And it generally just got the students started in a way that you didn't want to be the sort of church mouse crawling along the corridor with your satchel, hoping nobody will notice you.
Fantastic. So she's been kind of cradled in positivity, you know, the kind of Californian, the school, the mother, but also she did, life still was not that easy for her because her parents divorced and she had step brother and sister. They sound a bit tricky.
Yes, her parents separated when she was very small. They didn't divorce for a few years after that. And they did their very best to achieve a sort of normality. She would often spend weekends with her dad growing up. They worked very close and she would go off on trips to, you know, riding and fishing and those sort of things. And, you know, there was a good bond there. He used to take her on the set of the shows that he worked on, Married with Children and was it General Hospital? I can't remember.
General Hospital,
one of those big daytime American soaps. So she got used to being around actors at a young age. And her dad was full of good advice and his influence on her. I mean, the influence of her mum is quite obvious, but he was also very influential on her growing up. He stood up for the things that were right to stand up for.
He also was a very good dad in the way that he gave her lifts. He made sure she attended classes. He was a very good, loyal dad, you know.
Really. Yes, she was his third child, as you said. He already had two teenagers from his first marriage. And it was quite a mix of characters in the very early days before Meghan's mother, Doria, moved out. You can imagine that a very small child with two teenagers was not exactly a recipe for peace and harmony, but, you know, that's another thing, really.
Then again, that's, you know, if your life's plain sailing all the way through, you're never going to develop as a person. If she's had these hardships, like I've got an annoying older brother and sister, my parents divorcing, you know, struggles make the person.
They certainly do. And not least racial identity. She has said that one of the things that was most upsetting for her mum was being taken for the nanny when she was taking her Meghan for a walk in the stroller, as it were, around the rather nice, mainly white suburb that they lived in when Meghan was born. And can you imagine, you know, somebody comes up to her mother and says, Where's your mother? And so it's madness, isn't it?
I think also mixed race couples are more unusual are more unusual in America. I think in England, there is more mixing, wouldn't you say?
Well, I think that's a difficult one. I don't think there is any less racism or unconscious bias, as they like to call it in this country. But it isn't perhaps so obviously overt. When I was in the US a few years ago, researching a book about Britney Spears, I went to where she was brought up on the Mississippi-Louisiana border in a place called Macomb, which has a notorious history, but I found perfectly okay when I was there. Although, interestingly, I never saw a white person and a black person together walking down the street.
God, I know. I do. I think America has had a it's had a bigger divide, definitely, in its history. But the good positive thing about America is that it has a much bigger black middle class. So, you know, you can, you know, lawyers, you know, really good jobs do, you know, black people can get them, you know what I mean? They can get there probably maybe more, there's more social mobility within the black world than there is in England, if you know what I mean. That's what I've always...
Yes, well, indeed, and I appreciate what you're saying. It's not just within the black world, it is within the big world, and Kamala Harris is a prime example of that.
No, she's absolutely brilliant. So, yeah, you've talked about Meghan's demeaning role. I now want to go on to Meghan's relationship with men. Can you tell us about her first boyfriends and her first marriage?
Well, her first boyfriend is he's a well-known stand-up comedian in Los Angeles, a lovely bloke, and they met at a summer camp, which is obviously very popular in the US, which was run by the Agape Church, and it was a sort of acting and finding yourself few weeks, and her mum and dad would drop her off, and she had a rather innocent romance with this boy who was also mixed race, and they got on great together during, you know, the sort of, you know, romantic young teen stage. And he ruined it when they went and watched the film Clueless. And he decided to go off with his mates before the big denouement when the boy and girl in Clueless kiss. So Meghan was thoroughly fed up with this and gave him his marching orders the same evening or the next day. So that was the end of that. She had some reasonably long-term boyfriends at school, and she went to an all-girls school, but she was very, very much into drama at school, had a wonderful drama teacher there who has a star on the Hollywood pavement, actually, Gigi Perreau, and so she did lots of things, but they had to get boys in to play the boys' roles. So there was interaction with boys' schools. So her boyfriend at school was somebody who she appeared in plays with. And he, to his credit, actually most people that I can think of do not speak about Meghan and have not taken the dollar, as it were. There are one or two notable exceptions, and they know who they are, but not men.
That means that they have respect for her, because you don't.
Well, absolutely, mm-hmm. And why not? Her first husband, he was a up and coming Trevor Engelson.
That's it.
Yes, I hope I've got that right. he was an up-and-coming producer and agent in LA, who was making a good name for himself, which he continues to do. They lived together not far from Sunset in a rather a nice villa bungalow there. And they were very much part of the social scene. She was continuing to try and get her further up the ladder, as it were, and so was he. He was probably doing better than her, whereas through their 20s, he was a little bit older. And then she got the role in Suits. They married in Jamaica in a wonderful bohemian, for want of a better word, although can you have Bohemia on the beach? But anyway,
yeah, you can.
If you can, that's what they had, and a great fun wedding. But Suits is filmed in Toronto, and he was in Los Angeles, and distance doesn't necessarily help things. and they split up. It happens.
Her name was linked, though, to a sportsman, wasn't it?
Well, it was linked by the tabloid press over here with some appalling headlines, which was "Fancy a quick puck, Meghan."
Oh dear.
Draw your own conclusions on that. Must have sounded good over a beer at lunchtime.
Yeah, terrible. So, yeah, so that finished. But Suits actually was the making of her socially and also her, you know, her acting career, but also her speaking career. Because it was filmed in Toronto, which is sort of the hub in Canada of all things cultural, and it's where the Prime Minister lives, she sort of became a Hollywood star. She became a big fish in a small pond, didn't she?
Well, Suits, absolutely. Filming Suits in Toronto was a big deal. They would get recognised. When it started, they were sort of be watched by in the street. If they were filming in the street, they'd be watched by sort of two men and a dog. And then when it suddenly became a top rated, big rating show, huge crowds would gather to watch their favourites being filmed, sort of walking down the street or walking into a building, as they would do from time to time. And she built up very good social contacts in Toronto. A lot of it was via the city's Soho House. She became very good friends with people there and well-known. You'll find that society in these places is quite small, and Meghan was part of it. Her steady boyfriend, after her marriage fell down, was a celebrity chef, Corey Vitiello, and they were a well-known couple around and about.
Fantastic. No, yeah, it seems like she sort of, and then she went, because she got more and more fame, she began to being asked to an amazing talks all over the world. And then she became a kind of ambassador for all different charities.
Well, absolutely. She also started her website, and through her website, she increased, it's called the TIG, which is named after a rather nice Italian wine called Tignello. Hope I pronounced that right.
I'm quite impressed that she likes good red wine and cocktails.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. She's not a retiring flower. I don't want to give that impression at all. But she wanted to have more significance in the world. She appeared at various events, speaking about things that matter. And of course, most famously, she became a global ambassador, I think they call it anyway, for UN Women, and addressed a conference there, a superb speech in which she said that women should have a place at the table, and that basically men should also support women having a place at the table. It's one of the very interesting things that that Meghan always seems to say. It is not just women for women. It is everybody wanting gender equality. Does that make sense?
Yes. So she's saying that women shouldn't just be feminists, men should be feminists too.
Yeah, yes, yeah. Absolutely. That's true. And it is something that she carried on in this country, actually, in if I can just break off from our canter through her life, that at her last big engagement over here earlier in the year at a school, it was to encourage the male pupils as much as the female ones to recognize the importance and role of women in their lives and their society.
And I think we don't change. We don't change men's views on sexism, then it's never going to change, is it? Because it's the men who are sort of mostly doing it, even though women are sexist.
I completely agree with you.
But women can, I mean, I think I was a sexist when I was young, because you think like everybody else does, and then you become, you know, you are a sexist, and you've got to sort of have consciousness to stop being a sexist, even as a woman. It's very interesting. So she was having, yeah, the TIG was going well, great contacts. She's flying all over the world. She's friends now with lots of interesting PRs. And in the end, it was through a PR friend who introduced, she ended up in England and she ended up having a blind date with a prince.
Yes, indeed. It was at Soho House in Soho, obviously.
The one on Dean Street. I know it well.
oh, yes. Good. Yeah, no. A great place. And it was just an ordinary social drink, but they got on fantastically well. And their romance actually moved very quickly, I think it's fair to say. But I don't see anything wrong with that. If you know, you know.
Yeah, apparently he knew on the first night, according to your book, that she was...
Yes, indeed.
To be honest, I mean, I know we're not going to talk about Diana much because she's been over-talked about recently particularly, but I think she has a lot of qualities similar to Diana.
Yes, as he does. And I don't mind talking about Diana because I do feel that there is a... You know, this is for another conversation, but there seems to be a sort of creeping narrative of negativity about Diana at the moment, you know, brought about by various things. Obviously, the Martin Bashir interview, the Crown television series. It's as if...
she always had her enemies. Diana always had enemies.
Absolutely.
All Prince Charles's friends, basically, were against her, mostly.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think with the Charles becoming king looming larger or bigger on the horizon, I think there's a lot of very anxious people trying to not rewrite history because you can't, because it's a matter of record, but to just gnaw away at it a little bit then.
Exactly. Well, I think Meghan sounds superb. So they were together for 3 nights running. They also found out they had a lot in common. She loves dogs. At that moment she had 2 dogs. She loves at home as well. She loves her cooking. You know, she loves good food, good wine. So, and you know, coziness, which would be very attractive to him because it's sort of someone that's kind of settling. You can settle down with her. You know.
Oh, I completely agree with you. And let's not forget that his great love of Africa, and she embraced that as well. Yes. And
he took her to Africa very quickly, didn't he? He took her to Botswana, his favourite place in the world.
Yes, he did, and they just had a dream time. I mean, who wouldn't fall in love under those circumstances?
Yeah, lying under the stars in a tent, listening to the sounds of wild animals. It sounds delicious.
Well, I think you'd be outside the tent if you were underneath the stars, but yes, basically that's right. But also quite interestingly that he's engaged in many very worthwhile things in Africa, and they have that in common. She is a global ambassador, was until the palace stopped it, for World Vision Canada, and raised money for fresh water in Rwanda, visited refugee camps there.
Pre-Harry, isn't it?
Yes, that's pre-Harry. And it's something that he would have very much responded to. It is something that Diana would have done.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Rwanda, as we know, was very close to her heart. So it's so interesting that it's like, so they were in a blissful bubble and then suddenly, tell us the moment the press got hold of the story that he was dating Meghan and why and how did it go wrong?
Well, it was around Halloween, wasn't it? And there was a perfectly respectable story in the Sunday Express saying that he was dating an actor and an activist, still a human rights campaigner. But within a week, I call it the week in hell, she'd been relegated to being Harry's girl and Harry's hottie. This was, I think the media came upon it in the way that they had in the past without fully appreciating that actually this was a fully rounded woman of 35, a self-made millionaire, not as they seem to want to portray her, an 18-year-old, 19-year-old starlet. It was just so rude and demeaning. I mean, there was a very interesting story that one of the royal reporters said, description, and he said that Meghan was the daughter of a white man and a dreadlocked African-American woman. Hardly central casting for a royal princess. Not the most cruel thing ever written about her, but I think it reflected that sort of unconscious bias of racism. You could almost see or imagine the sort of newsrooms up and down the tabloid newspapers going, oh my God, she's black. Great, we can get so much mileage out of that, which is just horrid, isn't it?
It really is. And I think it's very telling that the stories you tell, like the quotes from the Mail and, you know, the Sun and things, are more racist. And then the Guardian, which is left-wing, is much more sympathetic. It sort of proves that they write for their readers. They don't write the truth.
Well, absolutely. Some of the headlines in the tabloid papers were quite horrid. I mean, describing her mum as being from the wrong side of the tracks, which is just rubbish. And but it wasn't also that. Quite interestingly, at the start of the book, I posed the question: was the negativity surrounding Meghan Markle based on racism, based on gender, based on nationality, or based on occupation? And basically, I found that while, you know, racism is disgusting and the most obvious, it's all of those things.
Yeah.
You know, they
she's an actress. She's a divorcee, you know.
Yes, absolutely. She was described within that first week that we were talking about as a saucy divorcee, for goodness sake. Yeah. What's that?
Yeah.
You know, it's appalling. Yeah. But people lap up negativity. And then, of course, online, the haters pile in because they think they've been given the green light to do so by people who, you know, people believe what they read, unfortunately.
Of course they do. Yeah, we know that being a journalist. Now, I just want to say, yeah, so she's got this terrible barrage. Now, what about meeting the firm, as they're called, the royals, who are officially the most dysfunctional family in Britain? How is her reception there?
Well, I think one of the more obvious things is a lack of support system for Meghan. Just aside from the royal family, she didn't have a ready-made circle of friends that could come on board with her. Diana had that. Kate Middleton has that.
In the UK, she hasn't got people in the UK.
Yes, that's what I mean. Yes, totally. In the UK, she was by herself. Sorry.
She has lots of friends, obviously, in Canada.
Oh, absolutely. And of course, she is an extremely sociable person. So not to have a sort of, you know, sisterhood is not quite right, but you understand what I'm trying to say. Yeah. And she didn't have a great rapport with Kate. I think that is blindingly obvious. Kate Middleton has three children. She has quite enough to think about. Why should, you know, they suddenly become...
Yeah, but you could be warm and friendly and welcoming to someone that's coming into, as I say, one of the most dysfunctional families.
Absolutely. I mean, I totally agree with you. And I don't think William and Kate have exactly covered themselves in glory where Harry and Meghan are concerned. And my own view is that they seem to be, it's as if when Harry and Meghan went to the back to the US, they left behind a sort of playbook on the desk at Frogmore Cottage, which which William and the rest of them have picked up. So we get, you know, William's cookbook, we get Charles and Vogue magazine, you know, I mean, it's just all a bit ridiculous, to be perfectly honest. When, this is just my own personal opinion, is that when Meghan and Harry left, Charisma left as well.
Oh, well, yeah, because they were young and vibrant and seemed much more alive than, you know, well, Kate and, sorry, God, I can't remember his name.
William.
Kate and William are just, they're serious, aren't they? They're serious and they're, you know, they're very like the Queen.
Well, indeed.
We want a bit of fun. We want a bit of glamour. We want a bit of glitz and caring.
I do. Yes, I think to be fair, I mean, Kate Middleton does bring glamour to her world, to be fair. But a very well-known columnist wrote about, you know, during the whole sort of Meghan saga, as it were, that we like our royal family dull, like William and Kate. I'm paraphrasing it.
And we like them weirdly.
That is it.
And weirdly, we like them posh as well. That's what they want. They want posh, you know, and we all say, oh, class, and we're anti-class. But actually, there's a respect in Britain. People want, you know, a lady or a, you know... Ridiculous.
Absolutely. And when I make the point in the book that when Meghan left this country, basically, she was an American woman, and she went, the first thing she practically said when she went back was, it's good to be home. Wow. So that says it all, really.
So what was the crisis? What was it, having their son Archie that brought on the crisis? Or was it kind of bubbling under from the beginning of their relationship, the crisis of stopping being royal?
Well, I think just the way that she was treated from the very beginning, by not just by the media, but by the palace, the men in grey suits, I think Diana used to call them, who would leak anything and everything. They seem to have some of the, you know, correspondence on speed dial, don't they, to with any bit of tittle-tattle going. I mean, I was thinking about this today. I think I mentioned it in the book, but, you know, the crimes of Meghan Markle, and they included not wearing a hat, wearing an off-the-shoulder dress.
Well, Dan, shutting, one of those, yeah.
Yeah, shutting her own car door. That's my favourite. I mean, it is just nonsensical.
It's a normal thing to do. Also, I read a thing that it said when Kate got married, they said, oh, her posy was beautiful, Lily of the Valley. When Meghan got married, they said she gave all her bridesmaids Lily of the Valley, this poisoned flower which could have easily killed all the bridesmaids. You know, I mean, it's like something out of a fairy tale, you know, the good.
Yeah, it's beyond ludicrous, isn't it? It's almost Cinderella or whatever.
This is what they must have picked up on, and they probably got very bored of it, angry, low.
Well, don't forget, Harry, in the very first week, after a few days, I think it was after the notorious headline in The Sun that said Harry's girl features on Pornhub, that Harry said, hey, can we just take a break here, I'm paraphrasing this, and have a breather and, you know, give this important woman in my life a chance, or words to that effect. And he was greeted with derision. And, you know, get real was what one of the tabloid newspapers wrote.
So he did say that every time that Meghan was hit on by the press, he said it brought back terrible memories and feelings of his mother, and it gave him anxiety. So I think it didn't help his mental health at all.
No, absolutely. And I think their move back to the US, while she was moving back, he was moving obviously for the first time, was a joint thing. I mean, the idea that this was, you know, Meghan dragging Harry by the hand is nonsense. You know, they are both seriously grown up people who've seen a lot of the world. They're now in their mid to late 30s, and they can make their own decisions. I refer in the book to the way women are treated in the royal family. I call them royal Stepford wives. And I'm not being mean to them. I'm just observing how they are treated.
It's terrible. Right. Now we're getting to the end of the interview. You have said you went to LA, which must have been exciting, going to all Meghan's haunts. But what is the future now? Can you predict after researching so much about them? What do you think is going to happen to wonderful Meghan?
Well, I think they're both going to be very much global people, as I said. I really hope that she can take up some sort of political role. I know, royal family, they shouldn't have anything to do with politics. I think as regards Meghan, she is an American woman, an American citizen living in America. As far as I'm concerned, she can do what she likes. And she is a wonderful public speaker. She speaks about things that actually matter in the world. So yes, bring it on.
I'd love it. Let's have a president. Let's have Meghan for president.
Oh yeah, of course. But let's not start off that big. Let's have Senator Markle to start with. And I mean, people say, they should lose their titles. I don't care.
I don't care.
Everybody knows who Harry and Meghan are. One of the half dozen most famous couples in the world.
Have to say someone's surname. You remember you telling me that before. If you don't have to say someone's surname, you know you're famous.
Yeah, also, absolutely.
They copied Princess Anne in the way that their children don't have, that Archie doesn't have a title. They don't want him encumbered. So every time he flies, it's like, oh God, he's got Prince in front of him. Because you get treated differently if you've got a title. And they wanted him to be freed up, didn't they?
Absolutely. I mean, Archie is the most important, thing. But he is a boy in their lives. So his future and well-being is clearly at the forefront of their thinking moving forward, and that's good.
Well, we wish them all the luck, don't we, Sean?
Well, we certainly do. And I really think that they are both forces for good in the world, and Meghan in particular. So what's wrong with that?
Fabulous. So if you want to know more about Meghan, because Sean does go into extraordinary, fantastic detail about, especially as I say, pre-fame, which obviously is all very fascinating. It's called Meghan Understood by Sean Smith, and it's published by HarperCollins. Thank you so much for coming on to Man Week.
It's been a great pleasure. Lovely to see you. See you next year.
Thanks a lot.